Hey there, friends. Jay Revel here. Welcome to another edition of Mid-Am Crisis. I sure am glad to have you listening in, as always. It's the middle of summer, and over across the pond, that means it's Lynx golf season on the European Tour. This week, the Scottish Open is at the Renaissance Club, as they like to say over there. And next week, obviously, we're leading into the Open Championship down at Royal St. George's in England, which made for a great opportunity for me to catch up with a good friend of mine. His name is Rue McDonald. If you don't know Rue, he is one of the whiz kids behind the European Tour's social media channels. We all get a chuckle from time to time at some of the viral content that they create, but they also do a lot of very serious things about the players on tour there. And Rue is one of these people that has really been working, I think, behind the scenes to make that tour's social media engine work so well in recent years. He's also kind of a big deal in the world of Scottish golf. Probably 5 or 6 years ago, really, when golf was seeing an early explosion of podcasts and shows that were promoting the game in unique ways, Rue created a show called the Scottish Golf Podcast, and it was one of the first golf podcasts that I ever really took a deep dive listening into. And week by week, he was really jumping into some unbelievable storytelling about the lesser-known courses in Scotland, the different regions there, and almost was able to provide, you know, me and many other listeners what I would call a master's-level education in Scottish golf. I still haven't had a chance to make it over the pond yet to experience that, but I think my wife could attest it's certainly an obsession of mine, and I think much of that is to the credit of Rue and that show that he created and the content that he continues to generate today, both about visiting Scotland to play golf and around the European Tour. So this week he's actually in the bubble along with many players going through COVID protocols, as we might all know. The European Tour is going through, you know, jumping from country to country. Those protocols are very different everywhere they go, and in Scotland, they're still pretty serious. So he's calling me from his hotel room, just outside, again, of the Renaissance Club. We talked after day one of the Scottish Open, which is really cool. The Open will be on all weekend. Grab your coffee, watch some incredible golf on one of the great new Lynx courses in Scotland, and be sure to be tuned in to the European Tour social media channel so you can see some of the great work that Rue is putting out. So we got a great conversation with him. We did just really moved all around his life and career and what things are like in Scotland today. Some of the places that you might want to be paying attention to next year if you're planning a Scottish golf trip in 2022. It's pretty interesting. There's about 3 years worth of backlog of folks going over there to travel. So some of the more prominent places are going to be pretty booked up. But as Rue points out, there are so many destinations in Scotland that you can still find an opportunity to go and book travel to and play some exquisite Lynx golf. So definitely, you know, heed his advice on that front. But it's a great show, great conversation. I think you're really going to like it. But before we jump in, I want to make a point about our show sponsor, my friends at Imagine Golf. This Sunday, they are dropping a brand new series. If you haven't downloaded the app, I would really encourage you to go and do so, because they're ramping up content at a really impressive rate. My friend Malcolm Scoville, who's the founder of the app, real visionary when it comes to how to use technology to make yourself a better thinker on and off the golf course. Imagine Golf, perfectly tailored for today's world. We're all stressed out. We're all going through a lot. And if you're like me, you struggle to find the time to practice your game, you know, as you're balancing all the things between life and golf. But what Imagine Golf allows you to do is take 3 to 5 minutes out of your day and listen to some of the great wisdom that's ever been shared in the game of golf, particularly as it pertains to the mental game. And even though I'm not able to go out and pound balls like I used to, I can still work on my game by listening to the Imagine Golf app. I really love it. I'm a big fan of it. And this week, they've got a new series that's debuting with Gary Player. The 9-time major winner is going to be teaching a class the entire week of the Open Championship, 7 days of these 3-minute lessons. It's part of what they call the Daily Drive. I think you're really going to like some of the things he has to say. I've had a chance to preview that content, and it's really strong. It's really cool, and it's pretty neat to hear that from someone who's won as many championships as he has. So definitely, if you haven't had the opportunity, go and download the Imagine Golf app. Check that out. A lot of really neat things coming next week and beyond. There's some other cool names that they'll be releasing soon, so keep an eye out for that. We appreciate their support of the show, and I appreciate your patronage as well. So thanks, as always, again, for tuning in. And without further delay, here is my conversation with Rue McDonald of the European Tour social media team and host of the Scottish Golf Podcast. Rue, how you doing, man?
I'm good, good. How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. How are things in Scotland this evening?
I am probably 100 yards away from Scotland's capital, Main Street, Princess Street. Unfortunately, in the bubble here in the hotel, but just finished up day one of the Scottish Open. So just trying to decompress and chat some golf with you.
You know, we were catching up a little bit earlier, and you talked about how, you know, you've landed your dream job. You're working with the European Tour, creating content, get to hang around with some of the best golfers in the world on a regular basis. But sometimes that puts you in a weird place where you're, you know, bundled up in a hotel room and not allowed to go see anybody.
Yeah, well, I've probably been in worse hotel rooms and worse spots. Being at home here in Scotland is nice, but yeah, the European Tour has muddled its way through the pandemic. It's obviously one of its key strengths is the diversity of places we travel to and the nationalities we have on our tour. But given the pandemic at the moment, that's a vulnerability. So we've certainly had more stringent regulations, and it remains the case. The Scottish government actually is a little bit more cautious when it comes to the pandemic versus maybe the English government. So we're following the rules. We're trying to obviously make sure the event goes ahead without any hitches, given that a lot of our players and a lot of our members are playing in the Open Championship next week.
You know, for those who are watching the tournament, it's, you know, coffee golf season for us here in the States, getting up early and watching, you know, nothing like waking up with a nice pot of coffee and seeing some Lynx golf on the tube. But what are the things that we're not seeing that are going on either because of COVID or just in relation to that, you know, with a tournament of that scale? Rolex Series event, I mean, this is one of the most important tournaments of the year for you guys.
Yeah, it was funny, actually. Colin Morikawa's caddy was speaking to Colin before today, and actually was excited to have them both wander into North Berwick and maybe play the West Lynx at North Berwick. And Colin had to tell his caddy that you can't leave the bubble. And he was like, what are you on about? It's 5 minutes down the road. And he, again, had to inform him that he couldn't leave the bubble. So, you know, usually a Scottish Open week for some of these young Americans like Colin and Will Zalatoris and Sam Burns coming over here to see Scottish golf and maybe experience a bit of the culture. Unfortunately, that's not happening. The players, the top guys, are all staying on site, not leaving the Renaissance Club. Other guys have, you know, proper Airbnb properties, but again, they can't leave the Airbnb property. We can only shuttle between the golf course and the hotel, so can't even stop for a takeout. So it's all pretty strict. And to be fair, I have a lot of sympathy for South Africans, Australians, the Asian players on the tour, because if they even think about going home, they're not going to get back very easily. So a lot of these guys have been away from their families, young families, for six months. So you know, they're playing for a lot of money this week, but it's also a lot of time, as all kind of professional golfers that play globally will know. It's a lot of time away from family, and that's kind of hard on some of the players. But no doubt it's going to be a great coffee golf week for you all watching in the States. The golf course is interesting enough, and the broadcast, the TV product, I think is going to be really good this week. So be sure to set their alarms and get up and enjoy the golf.
Yeah, I've already arranged for my daughter, who's, you know, 3.5 years old, to be staying at my parents this weekend. And Sunday morning, with her not there, instead of watching Sesame Street, I'm going to get to watch some Lynx golf. So I'm very much excited for that.
Right, yes, the field. I think we've got four of the top five in the world, and people like Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood. So we've got a great field, and it's interesting to see these guys because they're all just trying to hone their games ahead of like the major next week at St. George's. And if the wind blows, which hopefully the conditions were a little bit easy today, too much blue skies really for Scotland. It should be interesting. It should definitely be interesting to see the likes of Justin Thomas and John Rahm, who are already at the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, great get on the field, no doubt. It seems like how many years now are we into the Rolex series events? We've been doing that, what, a handful of
Four
years?
4 years actually now.
Yeah.
So these are the premium. These were always the biggest tournaments on the European Tour, but Keith Pelly, the CEO, came in with some real energy and managed to secure. What the Rolex Series is the European Tour's premium set of tournaments, and these are the tournaments that happen to be the best fields at the best venues around the world. Abu Dhabi, Scotland, Wentworth, and Dubai, the season-ending finale. So it's been cool to sort of be a part of that and see them grow from what are now over $8 million purses. So it definitely attracts the best players in the world, and it allows us to do some cool stuff. In terms of the content that we make during the week.
Talking about cool stuff and content, for those who are listening and might not know about what your day job entails, how would you describe your position with the European Tour?
Yeah, so I'm lucky that I'm one of I guess quite a small team of guys and girls that manage the content, and that's the social media channels and the website and YouTube. And yeah, your storytelling from the 21st century, that's kind of how I would tell my granny what I did, a sort of 21st century journalist. So it's been fun to be a part of. Definitely nowhere near the top of the team in terms of some of the viral videos that everyone's familiar with, but one of the little cogs at the bottom that churn out the week to week coverage on the European Tour and trying to showcase the personalities. I think that's another strength of the European Tour versus other tours around the world, is that we have characters and they're willing to express themselves and let the viewer into their personality, and we try and try and share that as much as possible.
I was listening to a friend of mine's podcast about, modern marketing today, and he was talking about how there's really no such thing as good content that's safe content. And I think one thing that the European Tour does extremely well, and you mentioned, you've got a small team that is working in unison on these things, but the ability to put things out there that test the boundaries, that maybe are a little counterintuitive, compared to maybe how some American organizations run their social media strategies and digital content. How would you describe just the mindset maybe when you guys are all, sitting around in a room somewhere going through strategy conversations? What's that conversation like?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to, certain individuals having incredible relationships with players, and that's built over, probably a decade now. And then those individuals having the ability to communicate the idea properly, and then having the people that actually shoot and edit the stuff to make these ideas come to life. So I do think it comes down to the players, really, that without the players, then the content doesn't happen. So the players having the trust in us to produce content, and then the various different people within the team to make it all happen. But it's I think the Tyrrell Hatton Angry Golfers one from Abu Dhabi was a perfect example of maybe someone that had a perceived image, and then him embracing that. And then actually, I think Tyrrell Hatton, who happens to be one of my kind of favorite guys out here, very misunderstood, quite a shy and reserved guy, and certainly approachable and always willing to say hi and ask how you're doing. His image before that video was probably a negative, and I think now everybody enjoys watching Tyrrell Hatton and seeing what he does next. And he is open and transparent and doesn't hide his emotions, and which makes a compelling product when you're watching it on TV. So it's been great to be a part of it. I think the way the Rolex series continues to grow, and the European Tour, I think people like Keith Pelly should get a lot of credit for allowing us to continue to push the boundaries.
when you know, somewhere in a pub, I'm sure from time to time you get asked the question, how'd you land that job? What's how do you answer that one?
Yeah, a bit lucky, I guess, in anything. But I think with social media now and with the internet, if you have a passion on a subject matter, then you you can sort of, you know, obviously create content around that. And my passion, as you know, is Scottish golf tourism. And it was the 2016 Scottish Open, and I had already sort of dabbled in social media consultancy, and Castle Stewart, the host of that Scottish Open, got in touch and said, I actually reached out to the general manager there and said, hey, I'm trying to get a break, and would you be interested in me helping your social media that week? That went really well. I ended up doing their social media for the week, collaborating with Golf Digest and Golf Channel and the European Tour, getting, you know, Castle Stewart seen wide and far. And the European Tour's head of social media, Jamie Kennedy, who's now head of social at Golf TV, he reached out a couple of months later and offered me a job. And yeah, four and a bit years later, I'm still with the European Tour. So I have Castle Stewart to thank, but I also have kind of myself to thank, because I put myself out there and put myself out there to work for free, and I guess it paid off.
You know, I seem to think of when I hear your voice or see something you're pushing out in the world, I recall those early days when you were launching the Scottish Golf Podcast. And, you know, for me, I felt like when golf really got into the world of podcasting in a big way, your show and some others almost were providing what I called a master's level education in golf knowledge, particularly when it came to course architecture and places to see that were maybe off the beaten path. And I felt like, you know, week by week I was tuning into your show and hearing about places that were you know, probably largely obscure to the majority of the American audience. And as you would be describing these places, I just was like, golly Moses, this world is so much bigger over there than I had ever imagined. You know, you think about places that host the Open and you know, those who maybe, you know, go hunting after royal titles and things like that when they travel, but you really shined a light on, you know, some of the maybe lesser known places. And I guess a good thing maybe to ask you is what made you get out of bed and decide you were going to go and do that?
I think I was still at university at that point, and one of the parts of my degree was learning about social media, which is kind of very much was in its infancy back then. But podcasting was on the verge of kind of becoming mainstream. So I think part of what I was pursuing was kind of becoming a specialist when it came to content and social media. So, you know, the best way to learn is by doing it. So I made myself a podcast, and then I spoke about something that I was interested in. So I wish I did more of it. I wish I did more of it now. I'm still, you know, ticking off the episodes, but I also had a good friend, Graylin Loomis, who, you know, used to write for Lynx magazine. He studied in St. Andrews as an American, and he got a great kind of perspective from, you know, as an American, maybe coming over with that perception that there's only a few golf courses. And he ended up building his own website and writing over 40 reviews about Scottish golf courses. So together we chatted probably on a weekly basis about various things and built up a great friendship, and yeah, a pretty small but loyal audience. And I continue to get emails every week from people that have either listened to past episodes or listening to the probably the once a month that I do post or post online. And definitely have plans to kind of go back into that more. I think the interest in Scottish golf travel remains and probably higher than ever before, just because of the pandemic. And then with the Open going back to St. Andrews next year, I think the level will increase again. So very fortunate to be, you know, growing up in Scotland, being able to travel in Scotland and play some of the best golf courses, and then trying to tell the stories as you do, I'm sure, of maybe untold stories or hidden gems. So yeah, it's been good fun, and hopefully I'll have plenty more episodes in the future.
So, you know, for those who maybe aren't aware of, just, you know, the impact on the restrictions and everything. What does the world of Scottish golf look like today at this moment, you know, in July of 2021?
Yeah, I guess Scotland is a little, as I said earlier, a little bit more cautious when it comes to the pandemic. We're a devolved nation, so we control our healthcare, you know, differently to what England and Wales and Northern Ireland would in the rest of the UK. What I said to you earlier, I think, was, you know, the golf trips might happen in at the tail end of this year in 2021, but 2022, I mean, we all hope we're back to normal and international travel is more of a regular thing. I think most of us are almost vaccinated now, so yeah, I think life is probably going to get back to normal, but as I said, I think a little bit slower than certainly England and other parts of, well, America and maybe other parts of the world. But you know, let's try and be optimistic and look ahead to 2022. I said to you, you were unsure whether there's enough tee times left. I think there's plenty of golf courses in Scotland that would be happy to see you next year. And the towns that you'll visit, St Andrews, North Berwick, they're still going to be there. So whether you play those golf courses or not, I think it's still going to be a cool trip and there's going to be loads of great golf to play. So yeah, don't discount a golf trip next year. I think we're all desperate to travel and experience things with people that we've maybe not spent as much time with.
So what's the Rue McDonald itinerary, the dream itinerary? If I were able to tell you, okay, I've got, you know, a big old stash of money I came into and I'm freed up, you know, by the missus and my clients to come over to Scotland for, you know, a week. Where are you taking me?
I would argue you don't even need all that stash of money. I think a misconception of Scotland is
mainly for beer.
Good point. Yeah, and whiskey. If you're going to the places I want you to go, but you can find affordable golf. You'll of course find the $250 green fee, which I'm sure you've got in the States. But we've got almost every golf course. I think 99% of Scottish golf courses are public, and that's great. That's a great starting point. I think people are naturally drawn to St Andrews, and I always try and tell people, yes, St Andrews, I understand why you're going to St Andrews, but you know, in a strange way, if St Andrews can be a great thing, the old course is obviously a great thing for Scottish golf tourism. But unlike Ireland, if you don't get a tee time at that one golf course, people are put off. You know, I don't want to come to Scotland if I'm not going to play the old course St Andrews. So I would say if that does happen, look, you can still queue up and get a tee time potentially, but don't rule out a Scottish golf trip. There's literally dozens of other great Scottish links golf courses that you should come over and play and you'll love. And my tip would be don't try and take on too much. Scotland's a small wee place. There's you could probably drive north to south in Scotland and the Gulf regions probably about 5 or 6 hours drive in time between the north and the south. But the mistake people make is they want to do it all in the same trip. And once you come to Scotland once, you'll be back. So don't try and take on too much. Try and pick one or two regions, whether that's East Lothian, where the Scottish Open is just now, maybe St Andrews, or where I live in the northeast of Scotland, you can play Aberdeen and the Highlands, which is Royal Dornoch, and combine those two regions. But don't do all 5 or 6 regions. That's just too much.
So tell me a little bit about your favorite places to play when you're just, you know, out for a hit on a Saturday up there where you live.
Well, I'm very lucky to be a member of Cruden Bay, which is an old Tom Morris course commissioned by the Great British Railway and opened in 1899, which makes it quite a new golf course, really, in Scottish terms. So, you know, a traditional links golf course, blind shots over sand dunes. We have beautiful ocean views. It really is the best place I could hope for to be a member of, and accessible to everybody, you know, no matter what kind of income you've got. It's a very affordable membership. That's another thing that people kind of hit their head against the wall when they hear of our annual dues. So I'm a member of Cruden Bay. It's a top 100 golf course. It has an 18-hole golf course. It has a 9-hole course. It has a driving range, all for probably $1,000 US a year. So Yeah, lucky. And then just down the road, we have some great golf courses, Royal Aberdeen, which I was lucky to play last week. That course is 1777, I believe. Wow. They invented the 5-minute rule for looking for your ball, which is obviously now 3 minutes. But also has the first reference of a golf hole anywhere in their literature, in their clubhouse. So a really cool old place. And then next door to that is Merkur Golf Links, classic hidden gem. Nobody's heard about it, but one of the great links golf courses that you'll play in Scotland. So, and then just up the road from Croonan Bay is Fraserburgh, which you just have to Google or go on Instagram, put in Fraserburgh Golf Club, and you'll thank me later. You can add that to your itinerary. So lots of great golf just in the Northeast, and just an example of just how little driving you have to do to plant your flag in one region and go enjoy that golf course, and then maybe spend 3 or 4 nights in another region and then head off home and plan your next trip.
I've read, we were talking about, you know, I've read quite a few books about golf in Scotland, and, you know, my favorite ones are the one where the author takes a pretty deep dive into a particular place. Last summer I read A Season in Dornoch, and it just filled my heart with joy on every page. And I also, you know, had this, you know, a real and, you know, steady longing that hasn't really gone away. I sit here and think, man, I think I just want to go find me a little perch like that and, you know, pack the bags for a long term and stay for a while. Is it as romantic as advertised for the golf, you know, obsessive like myself? It certainly sounds quite fantastic.
Yeah, I think Scotland has, you know, been ingrained in our culture for centuries. And I think no matter what corner of Scotland you visit, you're going to find a little golf community. And like, you know, these golf courses are so old that they're in the middle of the town, and the town evolves around the golf course. And a place like Dornoch, the sort of international visitors like yourself that go there is the stimulus for the economy there. Royal Dornoch is so far north that, you know, a lot of young people are drawn to the cities of Edinburgh and Glasgow and moving away from that area. So without tourism, without golf tourism, then these places become a lot smaller and a lot harder to keep young people in jobs. So you know, not only are you having a good time, you're doing a good thing by keeping these little towns going. But if I wanted to try and convince you or your family to come over, I think a place like Dornoch would be the perfect place. It's, you've got the castles and the mountains and the beaches to play with the family and do the family stuff, but you've got the golf for you to enjoy in the evenings.
Yeah, that sounds right up my alley. As long as they'll let me bring my dog, you know, I'm in for that. Yeah. You know, Rue, I sit here and I think about, you know, things like that. And I think about, you know, what the point you made, that golf is so ingrained in the culture in Scotland. But you know, I also read things, and maybe it's just when the Americans come over and try to build a golf course. Obviously, there's been much written about, you know, Donald Trump and some of his escapades in your native land. And sounds like that's done some damage to some other maybe well-meaning attempts like Mike Kaiser and the Cool Links project that's been talked about a lot up there near Dornoch. So what is the mood with, you know, your countrymen when it comes to the construction of new golf courses? Are there many more places where new golf courses are needed in Scotland?
Yeah, you touched on Mike Kaiser's golf course at Cool Links. Hopefully that one resurrects itself. That was a genuinely, you know, Mike Kaiser doesn't build bad golf courses, but he doesn't build golf courses in bad ways either. He's always conscious of the impact he has locally, whether it be, you know, the places that he's built like Bandon or Cabot. You know, he's stimulated that economy, those economies, and always looked after the people that look after his clients, I guess. I think you said there's too many golf courses. There arguably is too many golf courses. And a lot of the poorer golf courses have closed down. I think everybody's seen that kind of recession in the golf industry kind of maybe a few years ago. It's been perked up recently with the pandemic. But I think there's maybe apathy towards international golf developments, given what Trump did and how he did it in Aberdeen. His golf course in Aberdeen is, 10 minutes from my home. It wasn't one of the ones I mentioned there about the local courses. But, the golf course or the travel industry, what I talk about on my podcast, the great thing about what I do in the podcast is it's subjective. So it's like anything. It's like beer, coffee, woman. It's all subjective. And I feel like the Trump one wasn't kind of my cup of tea. It was very man-made and forced on the environment and set up to be difficult and not a very fun experience. I enjoy fun golf courses like North Berwick, like Macrahanish, like Croom Bay, like Royal Dornoch. So, I think if the right development came along, hopefully Cool Links comes along again and that can be looked at, from a greater picture of, okay, they're potentially harming 5% of an environmental area, but they're stimulating that degraded site and actually encouraging native species and wildlife to flourish. So I think I hope that development comes back, and I'd be interested to see if there's any other sites left out there for golf developments. I think they're few and far between.
Yeah, well, you've had a long time to find the good ones over there. So, you were talking about St. Andrews earlier. Open Championship next week's going, to Royal St. George's, but it was supposed to be in St. Andrews. Obviously, we've delayed a year, but I have to imagine going to an Open Championship in St. Andrews, particularly next year, the 150th anniversary, is quite the spectacle. Is that how would you describe something like that? Or have you ever been to an Open in St. Andrews? I figured you probably had.
Yeah, I've been to a couple, growing up in Scotland and having a dad that golfed, you would become accustomed to going to Open Championships. Lucky that I had Carnoustie an hour and a half down the road and St. Andrews 2 hours down the road. But look, anyone that's listening to this and that's been to St. Andrews, you understand that there's a real energy, not quite a New York energy, but there's certainly a buzz around the place. You're in a vibrant, prosperous town that has a lot of, it's a student town for a start, but you've also got thousands of tourists all kind of meeting up at bars and restaurants and imagine that, and then times it by 10 when it comes to the Open week. The open ballot for the St. Andrews Open is actually open at the moment, so there's absolutely no harm for anyone listening that's planning a golf trip to Scotland. Is why not put yourself in the ticket ballot for the Open? And even if you don't get a ticket for the Open, plan some golf around about the time that the Open's taking place, and maybe watch a round at the Open in St. Andrews. And you could probably capture some of the golf from the streets from the other side of the barrier. But you find yourself in a pub and actually save the atmosphere, because it'll be special, even if you're not behind the ropes watching the golf inside the old course. But it's a special place, and one that every golfer listening that has a passion for golf travel should get to at one point.
Well, again, comparing a place, we think about St. George's and the Open being down in England. Are the Lynx courses that are down to the south in England, how do they compare to the courses in Scotland? I mean, obviously, you've probably got some native bias, but I've always wondered, is there, anything materially different about how they're composed?
I'm not really that educated on the golf courses. What I do think is people like Cookie Jar Golf, if you've seen any of their videos recently, yeah. I think actually English golf, Lynx golf, is underrated. I don't think it's not being maybe sold as well as Scotland. We're lucky to have the Open here a lot. The English Open venues that you see on TV are pretty traditional golf clubs, I would say. But there are, I'm sure, lots of great Lynx golf courses in England that need people like Cookie Jar to tell those stories and showcase those venues. There's some amazing ones that have been told and their stories told, but I firmly will be staying in the Scottish lane and trying to tell the stories of Scottish golf courses that people visit. But Like Scotland, Ireland, England, even parts of Wales have some great links golf courses. We're just very lucky. I think there's a stat out there that Scotland has a third of the world's links golf courses. England might have almost a third of the other, and then the rest of the world sort of, Ireland and England would have another third, and then the rest of the world battles out for the last third. So we're very lucky.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You talk about continuing to tell those stories with Scottish golf. What are the stones out there you've yet to turn over in that world? Where do you want to go, and what stories are you hoping to get a chance to tell that maybe haven't quite met the muster just yet?
I think St Andrews. I think it's such an incredible place that there's so many interesting characters that just come through that place. You know, whether it's golf courses or it's people that are associated to the golf courses, or it's the venues around the town and some of the hotels around the town. I think I'd like one day, maybe after I leave the European Tour, is to sort of spend a couple of months in St Andrews, whether it's working or, you know, doing what you're doing and thinking about doing, is sort of taking a rental home and spending a couple of months soaking up the town. I think, you know, it's such a special place. And then the islands, I think the Scottish islands, they're remote. They're almost, you feel like you go back in time when you go to places like Isla. And I would love to maybe see some of the golf courses on the remote, you know, southwest of Scotland that maybe only have a couple of 100 visitor rounds a year, but are maintained by cows and sheep. But yeah, there's, you know, we're, as I said, we're very lucky to have so many varied, unique golf experiences and travel experiences, really.
How is the tourism arm of the government structured over there when it relates to promoting golf? You know, I know how, you know, I live in Florida, obviously, which is a tourist hub for a whole nother, you know, target demographic. But it's fascinating the way we do it here. You know, we kind of have Visit Florida is a sort of a you know, quasi governmental entity. How does it set up in Scotland?
Well, strangely enough, Visit Scotland are the government authority here, and they're supporters of this week's Scottish Open. So, you know, they put in a seven figure sum, you know, into that tournament, and they bring key partners, stakeholders to the event, but they obviously see the benefit of the global TV audience. But the overarching Visit Scotland are supporting tourism in many ways. And I think events have always been a big thing. Like, we had the Ryder Cup there in 2014. You know, we have the Scottish Open annually. We have the Open. So, you know, the government is there. They see the benefit of tourism to Scotland. And then within that, you've actually got a kind of substructure, which is promoting golf, you know, Scotland, where golf began, who I've been doing a couple of podcasts with, have a great website. So you should check that out for anybody listening. And the website there was scotlandwheregolfbegan.com. And you'll find loads of interesting articles and videos and podcasts all about Scotland there. And then you've got the regional groups. So as I said to you, go to these regions, find a couple of golf courses, plant your flag, get a nice Airbnb, and then enjoy. But, you know, these regions are promoting their own region, but they're also working with other regions to promote Scotland as a golf destination.
Yeah, that's very cool. We were talking again, you know, about next year and just the capacity in the system, so to speak, for tee times. Where what's the strategy there? Are they trying to move people into some of these more, lesser known regions? You know, I have to imagine, the Kingdom of Fife probably doesn't need all that much promotion every year to attract tourists. But, you know, some of these other regions, I would think, are probably just sitting there waiting to explode with some growth, so to speak.
Yeah, they're probably the overflow from St Andrews. But as I touched on earlier, St Andrews has too much interest, and it naturally overflows. I really can't recommend enough for people listening that maybe don't have an old course St Andrews tee time. You've got to go to the Highlands. You've got to play Royal Dornoch and Brora and these places. And and you know head east to Aberdeen in the northeast, and then we didn't even speak about the southwest, which is Prestwick and Royal Troon and Turnberry and Macrahadish. So you know we've got so much golf courses here that really you've got to come over, and you need to come over very soon.
I'm in. Yeah, we need to put that on the calendar soon. You mentioned Turnberry. Obviously, it kind of slipped out of the rota a little bit with the Open when President Trump bought it. But I've heard from some folks that the work they did on the actual golf course there is quite fantastic. What's your read on that?
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to play that course since the changes. Mackenzie and Ebert are pretty busy guys. They've done a lot of renovations to old Lynx golf courses in the UK. And yeah, I believe that course, having played it before and after, I think is better now, but it's, you know, it's an extortionate amount of money. It's something like £350 to play. And it's a bucket list golf course, but you know, I would say that you could probably, you know, it's that whole subjective nature of what I do and talk about, but there's, you know, Prestwick is like a museum, so you could go play Prestwick for maybe almost half of that and have a real unique experience golfing there. But hey, if you're coming on multiple trips, you can play them all.
You know, you were talking about the fact that, you know, 99% of the courses are open to the public over there. How would you describe just the attitude that the Scottish clubs have, you know, when welcoming guests? I mean, I've always heard, again, very good things, high praise. How would you describe that?
That's a great question, Jay. I think it's the culture thing again, right? So we're all members, but we also are very familiar with people coming to play our golf course. And speaking as a member of a club that has international visitors, I always felt proud that someone like yourself or your listeners would travel around the world to play my golf course. And, you know, the business model here, the clubs are owned by us members more often than not. And, you know, the members make collective decisions. And then one way to keep our annual dues down is to subsidize it through the visitor, you know, revenue that we make. And I guess the £500,000 that Cruden Bay generates in annual overseas visitor income, then that helps, you know, pay our way and keep our dues down. So I think, you know, generally I think we're all very receptive to you guys coming over, spending your money, enjoying the place, telling your friends about the place and coming back to play another time.
Do you ever hear of your fellow Scots talking about the potential of coming to golf trips in America?
I think we chase the sun, us Scots. Yeah. So we're naturally drawn to places like Portugal and Turkey, believe it or not, is a massive golf destination for the UK. But hey, I think Scotland is a golf-obsessed country, and the Masters, the US Open, these are all bucket list. The Sawgrass, for some reason, is a bucket list golf course for people. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's enough people that are interested to go to the US for golf. It's probably more to some of the events than golf courses. But I know I would love to play on the West Coast one day and play up the West Coast and maybe do a bit of a drive. And then also go to places like Bandon just to see if Bandon is comparable to Scotland. I know, you know, Mike Kaiser was influenced by his many trips to Scotland when he designed that place. And you know, the gorse and the sea views and the way the courses play are probably similar to some of the modern courses that have been built over here. So, yeah, I'd be keen one day to get over there. And I've been lucky enough to play a bit on Long Island, but maybe further afield, I'd be keen, along with many other Scots, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you know, if the only golf you ever get to play in the States is on Long Island, you've probably sampled some of the top stuff for sure.
Well, I played in Orlando, which is probably the other side of it.
Yeah, that's probably not very good. Where did you play down there, out of curiosity?
Winter Park.
Oh well, that's you sampled the best of the bunch there.
Yeah, before the renovation, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was a cool spot.
Yeah, it's pretty sporty now. It's a neat little place.
Yeah, it looks busy, and there's a real culture there as well. So
it's funny. There are some places here in the States, you come across them. They're rare, but you come across them every now and then, and you'll find these little golf-obsessed hamlets, and they just happen to have a neat, quirky course, and it does have some ties to the town. And these were ones that were, largely built in the 20s and 30s here in the States, but they do exist, and there's some really interesting backstories and neat things out there. But for me, I just finished Tom Coyne's new book, a course called America, and he did a good job diving into some of those unique little spots that are off the beaten path. But most of the bucket list American places are very commercialized, but there are some really good gems out there. You just got to go on quite the hunt to find them.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fun. You mentioned the newer courses in Scotland. Maybe kind of coming back full circle. You again, the Scottish Open is at, as you folks like to say, the Renaissance Club. I like that articulation of it. Tell me about that place, and tell me a little bit about some of the modern courses over there. And just, you can leave the Trump stuff out. We know we've covered that, but how do those newer courses compare? You mentioned Castle Stewart earlier, some of the classics.
Yeah. Castle Stewart is like an old golf course. It plays very much like it's been there for a long time. And that's testament to Mark Parson, who sadly passed away a few years ago, but was aided by Gil Hans on that one. Yeah, Castle Stewart would be in my top five courses in Scotland. I think the way they've made the most of the kind of parcel of land they had, it's a very different experience. It's wide open, it's playable, it's fun. It's definitely not like a traditional golf course. It's for a golf trip, I think it's actually a nice change away from maybe the grind of tight gorse line fairways and tricky pot bunkers. There's actually a really cool golf course, which is owned by Troon Golf, but designed by an English guy just outside St Andrews, next to King's Barnes in Dunbarney, which is going to be host to the Women's Scottish Open. And that's a really cool modern golf course. But I think these modern courses, King's Barnes has obviously been a rave success. The modern golf courses have certainly aided guys doing what I'm suggesting, building their golf trips around one destination, because I guess people would struggle to get up to Dornoch maybe, but with the inclusion of Castle Stewart and Nairn just down the road, it gives them a reason to stay there, go there, stay there a couple of nights and play some other golf courses nearby.
Yeah, that's very cool. What about maybe a good wrap-up question final descent here? Tell me a little bit about some of the other things worth going and seeing in Scotland. One of the top things on my list, and this is probably very touristy of me, but I love the Royal Edinburgh military tattoo. I think that is the coolest thing. That looks so incredible. I kind of generally like bagpipe music, but I'm probably one of the weirdos that will listen to that stuff on occasion. But where are the places that are non-golf related in Scotland that if someone's coming over there on a trip, you would recommend they go and partake in?
Yeah, I think the pandemic's allowing us all to sort of appreciate the outdoors a little bit, and I think Scotland has some of the most spectacular, clean outdoor spaces, rural spaces, and the mountains that we have, the beaches, the rivers, the lochs. I think that's the appeal. The strange thing that I've heard is how big Scotland's skies and sunsets are. We have incredible wide open spaces and the landforms that have been, forged from glaciers I would say the lochs, the castles, our history. You'll go to a castle that's older than America, which will blow your mind. So I think it's diving into some of the history of Scotland, the sort of I would say the civil war that broke out for decades and decades in Scotland, and enjoying the outdoor spaces. Skye, the Isle of Skye is probably picturesque, stereotype Scotland, and you'll get all that on Skye. So maybe head to Skye and then head over to the mainland and play some golf.
Yeah, love it. How's the food?
Getting better. I'm married to a dietitian, so I've managed to find out that Scotland does have good fresh produce. I think you have to go further afield than maybe some pub grub, but we have some of the finest seafood that's shipped all around the world, and we have some amazing chefs as well in restaurants, and again we're modernizing. And there's more and more crafty little foodie places. So don't worry about the food. Don't worry about the whiskey, the beer, the golf, the hospitality. We've got pretty much all of it.
Now, what? All right. Now, true final question. Tell me about your whiskey preferences over there. And, you know, what are you keeping in your stash at the house? And what are you sending to your top friends and clients for the holidays?
No, I'm still very much in my infancy when it comes to whiskey. My taste buds haven't matured. I have some friends that are really into it, that collect whiskey, you know, for investments down the road. But no, I'm, you know, craft beer's taken off here in Scotland, and pretty much stuck to that for the time being. But I know it's, you know, the thing about whiskey is, our Scotch is that Scotland's the home of that as well as golf. And, you know, if you are into your Scotch whiskey, then by God, you could have a good trip. Combine that with some golf. But yeah, the spirits generally is not an area that I've dabbled too much in. But the gin industry is almost overtaking the whiskey industry now in Scotland as well. So, yeah, we've got plenty of that as well.
That's very cool. I know you've got things are getting late over there on your side of the pond, and you got a busy day ahead of you tomorrow for round two of the Scottish Open. I'll be watching online and with a pot of coffee and thinking about you, and wish you good luck the rest of the week, man. It's going to be an exciting finish, I would imagine.
Yeah, Jay, it's going to be hopefully another sunny day tomorrow, but I really enjoyed, you know, when I started my podcast, I enjoyed talking to people like you and building relationships. And the golf industry is a small place. And yeah, spending an hour or so with you, hopefully one day you'll get over here, your listeners will get over here and enjoy some golf. But I've enjoyed chatting and enjoy the coffee golf tomorrow.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate it. And keep churning out all the great content, man. You guys are doing an awesome job. And, you know, hopefully when all these, you know, pandemic things fully subside, I'll be able to hop on a bird, come over there and see you. Maybe we can peg it a little bit.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, man, I will too. Thanks again, Rue, and we'll talk to you soon, pal.
Cheers.
Cheers.